Welcome to the 138th edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin, of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome again, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Laura, 10 of the Republican presidential candidates, 10, showed up in Des Moines this past Saturday night to take part at the Faith and Freedom Coalition Town Hall. We're going to talk about what each of them had to say, but first, we begin with what happened last week regarding President Biden. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy opened an impeachment inquiry against Biden, and Laura, this appears to be an effort to appease the extreme right wing of his own party.
Yes, it was ironic because this is very similar to what House Speaker Nancy Pelosi did in 2019 with the first Trump impeachment, that she ordered an impeachment inquiry to begin without a vote. And at the time, Kevin McCarthy was very critical of the idea of even authorizing an inquiry without a formal vote of the House. Now he has a slim majority. It was a 5-member majority. It's down to 4 members because one of the Republicans stepped down and the election hasn't been held to fill the seat yet. And so it's not even clear whether they have the votes to support this inquiry, but that is why I think that he ordered it without a vote. At some point, depending on what these committees report, it's very likely that articles of impeachment will come before the House. And right now it's anyone's guess whether they're going to have the votes to pass them.
He said he's going to ask 3 committees, Oversight, Judiciary, and Ways and Means, to carry out this inquiry into the president and his family. And he accused Joe Biden of lying about his knowledge of his son Hunter's business dealings. We're going to talk about Hunter in just a moment or two. But a lot of this is about Hunter Biden, and he really appears to be at this moment dragging his father into some perditious areas, shall we say.
Well, right now, I mean, I followed some of these stories over the summer about the whistleblower testimony. And so far, there has not been any evidence from any bank records that any money actually flowed to Joe Biden from any of these business dealings. There was talk that Hunter Biden certainly dropped his family name. I mean, of course, it's not surprising that a lot of people related to the president have advances in business during that time. But I have not seen any evidence. I think they're hoping that evidence will come up during these hearings that actually indicate that Joe Biden received money from any of Hunter's business activities.
A White House spokesman said McCarthy is engaging in, quote, now, extreme politics at its worst. That's the Democrats' view of it. Where do GOP presidential candidates stand on impeaching, or at least the inquiry into impeaching Joe Biden? Virtually all of them are in favor.
Yes. Well, Donald Trump definitely is not just in favor of an inquiry, but he already has said that he thinks that Joe Biden should be impeached. Most of the other candidates have said that they support some kind of an investigation, and some of them have phrased that more strongly than others.
The Iowa House delegation, composed of all Republicans, supports the inquiry, and that is not a surprise.
That's right, even though they were very critical. Now, I should say, none of the members of the Iowa House served in Congress at the time of the first Donald Trump impeachment. Some of them were candidates at that time. 3 of them were in Congress at the time of the second Trump impeachment, and Ashley Hinson, Marionette Miller Meeks, and Randy Feenstra all voted against impeaching Trump that second time.
Laura, to a lot of folks, a lot of Democrats, this appears to be tit for tat because they impeached President Trump twice. And it looks, and I've said this on this broadcast, and I'm not sure whether you agree with me or not, I think we're in an era of politics, Laura, where every future president, every president is going to be impeached.
If the House of Representatives is controlled by the other party, I think that may be the era we're in. I think I would agree with that. I have not seen any polling that indicates that the majority of Americans are supportive of this impeachment, but I think it depends on what kind of evidence they turn up. I mean, public opinion can change.
Yep. Well, as if to add to the Biden family's troubles, well, it was added to Hunter Biden, the son of President Biden, indicted last week for allegedly making false statements and for illegal gun possession. It looked as if there was a deal just weeks ago to have him apologize and do some reparations. And now it all fell apart. And now Hunter Biden indicted.
Yes. And I mean, from what I've read about this case, this is related to the fact that during the time he purchased a weapon that he only briefly owned, but he signed a document that said that he wasn't using any illegal substances. And of course, he was using drugs at that time. That was, he is reportedly now in recovery. From what I've read, this is a crime that is fair, that is rarely charged. And I think that that's why the original plea agreement, in which he would have pled guilty to tax violations, did not involve this gun charge, because that is something, especially in the state of Delaware, it's just not something people are frequently charged with, using narcotics while they own a firearm.
If you are a historian of presidential politics in this country, you know that we are in uncharted territory. We are going to have an election in which one of the nominees, President Biden, may face impeachment. Another nominee, President Trump, has already been impeached twice. It's incredible what we're getting into.
It really is. And I mean, we'll see. Like I said, it may be a heavy lift to get articles of impeachment through the House of Representatives. There's no way they would get a two-thirds vote in the Senate to convict President Biden, but the Senate would have to hold some kind of an impeachment trial. And then it would be interesting to see whether all of the Republicans voted to convict or whether there were some defections. Certainly, there won't be any Democrats in Congress who vote in the House to impeach Biden or to convict him.
Right. There's no chance he's going to be convicted in the Senate. This is all largely for show and for revenge.
I think so. And I mean, the difference is that Donald Trump himself is going to be the criminal defendant in a lot of these trials, whereas the Hunter Biden entanglement, I mean, the Hunter Biden may be prosecuted during this period, but that is very different from a direct link. Now, again, if they can find some evidence that directly implicates Joe Biden in something criminal, that might change public opinion. But I haven't seen anything that shows that a significant number of Americans, that their opinion of Joe Biden depends on Hunter Biden.
All right, let's go from Democrats to Republicans now. There were a lot of Republicans, especially presidential candidates, in Des Moines on Saturday night, 10 of them, along with 1,000 other people. It was the annual Iowa Faith and Freedom Coalition presidential town hall. Donald Trump, let's just say off the top, he was not there. 10 others were. Let's start with Ron DeSantis.
I have to first critique the format a little. And we talked about this earlier when we were in the summer, when we talked about the Family Leadership Summit. This is just a pet peeve of mine. If you're going to interview, in this case, 10 presidential candidates, you need to ask them roughly the same questions, maybe not verbatim the same questions, but you need to ask them all about the same things. And that just didn't happen at all. So they had two different interviewers, Ralph Reed of the Faith and Freedom Coalition nationally, and then Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd. And the questions were all over the place. With some of the candidates, it seemed like they started with territory that the candidates would want to talk about. And then with others, they started with a very uncomfortable question. So I just personally, I didn't care for the format at all. And I should say that I watched this on C-SPAN. I was not there in person.
Right. All right. Well, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said he is open to pro-life federal abortion legislation. That's not a surprise. There were no surprises here. He also supports Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville's actions to hold up the promotions of senior military officers because of, well, frankly, the Defense Department's abortion policies.
And this is, I felt, for me, this was the big takeaway from the event, that Ron DeSantis has decided that his ticket to making big gains on Donald Trump in Iowa is going to be the abortion issue. Of course, he signed a bill that would ban almost all abortions in Florida. He is very supportive. Trump has been hedging on the issue. And the fact that Ron DeSantis came out and said he supports holding up all of these military promotions to stop what he called abortion tourism, I thought that was a very clear signal that this is something his campaign has decided is going to potentially make the difference.
Right. Nikki Haley said the Republican Party does not have the votes in the Senate for a federal abortion ban and that the American people deserve the truth on that. She had said that before in the debate.
She had. This is something, so there are no, of all of the large Republican field, there are no pro-choice Republican presidential candidates. However, there still are a significant number of pro-choice Republican voters. And I think that Nikki Haley, again, she's being very shrewd here. She is not supportive of abortion rights. She has signed bills that would ban abortion after certain stages, but she's trying to sound pragmatic about the issue. She was very critical of Tommy Tuberville. She has a husband who is deployed right now, and she said that it is really not fair to the people who are serving this country to hold up their promotions. So I feel like she's trying to carve out a niche that would attract pro-choice voters, even though she herself is not pro-choice.
Vivek Ramaswamy, yes, he was there. He said he's committed to eliminating The FBI. All right. He'll eliminate almost anything. He also challenged other candidates to put out a list, as he has of proposed judicial nominees. So he's really, I'm not sure what swath of the party he's going for, but he just keeps saying some things that some people would consider way out there.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it was really, again, Brenna Byrd interviewed him and she started out with a question about ESG investing. And I mean, it was just off the wall kind of because it was not the question that other candidates had been asked. And I don't know where she was going with that. He wasn't asked the straightforward question about an abortion ban. But yes, he has said she did press him a little bit on shutting down the FBI. She said, well, I think that the current FBI office in Washington is really politicized, but the FBI as a whole does good, important law enforcement work. And he tried to clarify that what he means is he would basically fire everybody that's at the main office of the FBI would be gone. They'd have to go work in the private sector. But then the field agents, the 15,000 or so field agents, he would reassign them to other agencies. So maybe some would work with the federal marshals, some might work with the Department of Homeland Security and so on. And he made the argument that this would be more efficient than continuing to operate. He said the FBI is essentially non-reformable.
Right. All right. I'm going to just summarize briefly what everybody said and you jump in and pick the ones you'd like to talk about. Tim Scott said the coronavirus vaccine mandates, well, they're bad. Mike Pence accused his GOP competitors of ignoring traditional Republican values. Ryan Binkley said he felt called by God to run for president. Perry Johnson said the Republican National Committee has corrupted the election process. Asa Hutchinson criticized several of his challengers for their stances on immigration. Will Hurd talked about renewing the strength of our partnership with Israel, and Larry Elder said he does not support a federal law restricting abortion, and that issue should be left to the states. All right, jump on in.
I thought what was interesting, again, on abortion, Tim Scott does support a national 15-week abortion ban, as does Mike Pence. It sounded like Mike Pence is certainly open to going beyond 15 weeks, more restrictive rather than 15 weeks, but he supports that national abortion ban. I think that he is also hoping, Mike Pence was making the case that he's not new to this cause. He's been a pro-life politician his entire career. I think that Asa Hutchinson, I thought what was interesting was that he was saying basically that what some of the other candidates are talking about the border with Mexico is not realistic. Mexico's an ally and we can't invade Mexico. He didn't name Ron DeSantis, but clearly he was targeting Ron DeSantis with that. Larry Elder, I mean, he has been struggling to get oxygen really because he didn't qualify for the first debate and he's not likely to qualify for the second debate. But I thought it was interesting that he said, look, this is not a federal issue. This is a state issue. It's just, we're not ever going to be able to ban abortion federally. I thought that was surprising that he said that to that audience.
Meanwhile, Mr. Trump was not in Des Moines, but he was in New York to be on Meet the Press with Kristen Welker, her first show after she took it over. And he made national news when he said he would not sign a 15-week abortion ban. In fact, he wouldn't commit to signing any kind of abortion ban. He said he'd get together with Democrats and Republicans and everything would be fine. Wow.
This was really, it was almost like a gift, the biggest gift of the DeSantis campaign that they could have asked for, because they were already trying to make the case that Ron DeSantis, he did events with pastors in Iowa over the weekend, that he is the candidate he signed a 6-week abortion ban in Florida. And then Donald Trump comes out, Donald Trump, who has been leading in all the polls, including leading among evangelical voters. And he comes out and basically says, not only that he did not commit to signing a federal abortion ban, but he actually said it was terrible. He said that the states that have banned abortion at 6 weeks, he called that terrible. And so, I mean, that I am very interested to see whether this could finally be the issue that causes evangelical Christian Republicans to move away from Donald Trump, because that is like the biggest third rail that you could ever step on in the Republican context.
We will see. I have doubts about that, but we're going to see. Meanwhile, to wrap this one up, the former president is going to ramp up his Iowa campaign schedule in the next few weeks and the next GOP presidential debate, September 27th at the Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley. And the former president announced today he's not going to be at that one. He's going to be giving a speech to Detroit union members.
Yes. So Donald Trump, I mean, it's interesting that he's going to be doing more events in Iowa. He's had a very light schedule in Iowa this year. This coming week, he's going to be in Maquoketa and Dubuque. That is really striking. If you've followed Iowa politics, those used to be heavily Democratic areas, but they're like those, a lot of those Mississippi River counties have really swung toward Republicans in recent years. And Donald Trump is a big part of that. So he's going to be there. He hasn't announced that he's going to make several appearances in October, and they haven't announced the locations yet. But I think one thing that I forgot to mention in the context of this abortion, that's a subtext that the former president didn't say when he was on Meet the Press. But I think that he likes the idea that the Republican handling of abortion is what hurt the Republican Party in the midterm elections, because the other explanation for the weak Republican performance in the 2022 midterms is that candidates who were very closely tied to Donald Trump did poorly and underperformed. So it's like dueling narratives. And so I think that's partly why he's trying to create some distance between himself and some of the other candidates on abortion.
Dueling narratives, we love it on Capitol Week. That's what we live for. 15 minutes and 38 seconds after the hour, wherever you are in the world listening to us, this is KHOI's Capitol Week with Laura Bellin and me, Dennis Hart, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. We are here every week at this time to talk about what's been happening in and around the state capitol or elsewhere if it affects us and what it all means. Laura, while Republicans were making all the news, oh my goodness, in Iowa this past weekend, Iowa Democrats tried to make a little bit of news. They have voted to hold their in-person caucuses on the same night that the Republicans are going to do it, January 15th. Was this a surprise to you?
No, this is a longstanding tradition that Iowa Democrats and Republicans hold their caucuses on the same night. And the reason is that both parties allow same day registration. That is, you can come and change your registration on caucus night to participate. So what they want to avoid is a large group of people going to the Democratic caucus one night and then a week or two later going to the Republican caucus. And also, as we've discussed on previous shows, the Iowa Democratic Party is going to do some kind of mail-in presidential preference. They are not going to do the usual presidential preference voting at the caucuses on January 15th. So it's not as important. The Democrats would have certainly preferred not to have the caucuses on MLK Junior Day. However, the fact that people can still participate by mail and express a preference for a presidential candidate without being there at their caucus on January 15th, I think that made it a much easier decision for the leadership of the Iowa Democratic Party to go ahead and hold their in-person caucuses on the same night as Republicans.
The Democratic National Committee's Rules and Bylaws Committee says that Democrats in Iowa have to assure that the postmark deadline for that mail-in presidential preference card is March 5th of next year or later. Is that going to cause any kind of confusion, do you think, at the caucuses?
Well, I think it is. It's interesting. So Iowa is not on the DNC's list of early states, and that's why they want to make sure that Iowa doesn't announce any results prior to Super Tuesday. I think it was interesting to me that the DNC said that they want to make sure that the postmark deadline is no earlier than March 5th, whereas I had the impression the Iowa Democratic Party hasn't made clear exactly how they're going to do this, but I had the impression that they might collect all the cards earlier and then not announce the result of the tally of the presidential preference until after that early state window. So now it's more like they can't even finish collecting the mail-in preference cards until March 5th. So I'm not exactly sure. I think the Iowa Democratic Party ultimately will go along with what the DNC wants on this, because it's not really going to be a competitive caucus on the Democratic side anyway. And they don't want to lose their delegates for the DNC, the National Convention.
And as you suggest, it does appear the Republicans are going to continue allowing same-day voter registration during the caucuses.
I mean, this was kind of funny to me because I was covering during the legislative session when State Representative Bobby Kaufman introduced this bill on changing the caucus process. The first draft of the bill would have said that you had to be a registered member of the party 70 days before the caucus. And I assumed that this was something that might benefit the Trump campaign because Representative Kaufman is a paid advisor to the Trump campaign. But in any case, the final version of that bill, I think there were some constitutional concerns with that. And so that's why the final version that Governor Reynolds signed into law did not say anything about the voter registration deadline. And I thought it was interesting that in light of this recent statement from the state party chair, Jeff Kaufman, who is the father of Bobby Kaufman, he said that they can't really change their rules because it's in the Republican Party of Iowa's bylaws and constitution, basically, that they have to allow same day registration. I thought, well, if it's in their constitution, I wonder why on earth Bobby Kaufman even put it in his bill to have this early registration deadline. But in any case, it looks like any Iowan will be able to show up at their precinct caucus, the Republican caucus, and change their voter registration on the evening of January 15th if they want to.
All right. Let's get back to the calls that a lot of GOP folks, including some presidential candidates, have made to tee up the FBI and talk about cutting it down, reassigning. Chuck Grassley weighed in on that last week, a U.S. Senator from Iowa. He said, and this is his word, stupid for Republicans to push to defund or shut down the FBI.
As Senator Grassley, and again, I should mention, I'm not allowed to participate in his press calls with Iowa reporters, but this is something that I've noticed that he likes to do. You may remember when Donald Trump was still president, there was something where he had said something about wind power and wind turbines, and Senator Grassley said that was idiotic. He likes to use a sort of attention-getting word like that in these conference calls with Iowa reporters, and then that makes a lot of headlines. And Chuck Grassley, of course, has been at the forefront, along with Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, in arguing that the FBI has been politicized and complaining about the FBI's treatment of Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And yet, even for Senator Grassley, this goes too far to talk about defunding and shutting down the FBI. So he clearly is not on board with Vivek Ramaswamy's ideas on this.
Apparently not, no. All right, the Des Moines Register wrote last week, somewhat in wonderment, I thought, that Democrats not only do not have a candidate yet in the second congressional district race, that would be Republican Ashley Hinson as the incumbent, but in the third district, which is the most competitive, Republican Zach Nunn, the incumbent, there is not yet a Democratic candidate who's come forward.
Yes, and to compare this to when in 2017, when David Young was representing that version of the third district, at this time there were already about a half a dozen Democratic candidates who had said that they were going to seek the nomination to challenge David Young. And Cindy Axne lost last year by only about 0.6% of the vote. Really, it was not an overwhelming victory for Zach Nunn. So you would think, I think that was where the frame of the Des Moines Register's coverage was coming from. You would think that there would be lots of Democrats lining up to try to take a crack at beating Zach Nunn, because usually an incumbent's first reelection cycle is when they're most vulnerable. I think what's tricky is it is difficult to beat an incumbent in Iowa. No one really knows. Presidential year turnout usually is higher than midterm election turnout. Not clear yet whether that's going to favor Democrats or Republicans. I haven't heard a lot of names of Democrats who are even considering this race. Teresa Greenfield, who was the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate in 2020, is a name that some people had mentioned, but I haven't heard anything from her camp on it. And so I really don't know. It could be that the Democrats are waiting until after October 1st so that somebody can declare and then have most of the fourth quarter to raise money before they have to report their fundraising. But I'm just not sure. I don't think that a lot of people are eager to sign up to run against Zach Nunn.
Right. All right. Here's a story that you, Laura Bellin, are extremely excited about. I have to tell our audience that you are very good. You are excellent at picking out state House and Senate races, and you get extremely excited as I do about the caucuses. All right. You wrote this past week, excitedly wrote, that Iowa House District 22, the primary between Samantha Fett and Garrett Gobble. You are very excited about this.
So I love state legislative coverage and going really deep on some of these state legislative districts. And normally I focus on the battleground districts that are going to be up for grabs between Democrats and Republicans in November. This one is a little bit different. The Iowa House District 22, this is parts of Warren County, not the city of Indianola, but including Norwalk and Carlisle and a few other places in Warren County. This is an area that's trended pretty heavily toward the Republicans. So the Republican primary election is probably going to determine who the next representative is. The current representative, Stan Gustafson, is retiring. And the reason why I think it's very interesting is the primary right now, Samantha Fett, she is a former Carlisle school board member, but she was very active during the legislative session the last couple of years. She's a chapter leader for Moms for Liberty. She was up there lobbying for the various bills education-related bills and also bills related to LGBTQ Iowans. So she was very closely aligned with Governor Reynolds. Garrett Gobble, he served a term in the House in Ankeny. He lost his reelection bid in 2022, so he was not there this year. He was perceived as one of the incumbents in the House who opposed the governor's school voucher bill. And he came out a couple of weeks ago and said, you know what, I was wrong about education savings accounts. It turns out this is a really great idea. And I felt that the whole subtext of that, of his Des Moines Register article was like, please, Kim Reynolds, don't get involved in my primary and endorse the other candidate. So I'm very curious to see whether the governor gets involved in primaries now that she already got her school voucher plan through. I'm very curious to see how it's going to work in an open seat race between more of a traditional Republican and a Moms for Liberty candidate. And all in all, just looks very interesting. I haven't heard about any Democrats running in this district. And in the last election cycle, the Democrats did not field a candidate here.
Right. I want to make sure we get this story in. So I'm going to jump down to the proposed bill that would block, and I'm using the quote now, vexatious citizens from accessing public records in Iowa. Now, Laura, I have to ask you, is your middle name vexatious?
Well, I saw this last week, this proposal that the Iowa Public Information Board, it's a state board. It was created about 10 years ago to enforce the open records and open meetings laws. And so this proposal really was out from left field because it's more like a proposal that is looking out for government bodies than people who are requesting public records. But yes, the concept, and this is not an official thing that the Iowa Public Information Board is recommending to the legislature yet, but this is a proposal that is going to probably come before the full board and they will discuss it. But the idea is that a government body could go to this state board and ask to have an individual declared to be a vexatious requester who is using public records requests in an abusive and harassing way. And then if the board agreed and designated that person a vexatious requester, then the government body would be able to ignore that person's records request for up to a year. So of course, I was very alarmed as a reporter who files a lot of records requests. And so was Clark Kaufman of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. He and I were both on the telephonic meeting where they considered this proposal. And the people on the board said, oh, you know, no, we're not just talking about people who file frequent records requests or people who are, we're not talking about people who file legitimate requests for information. We're talking about people who are really using the process to harass government employees. So in any case, I didn't get the impression that this is something that they're definitely ready to tee up for the legislature, but I was concerned. The Iowa Freedom of Information Council, which is a nonprofit that is focused on transparency issues, they expressed concern. They wrote a letter that outlined a lot of constitutional problems with this proposal. So I don't know if it's going to go anywhere, but yes, it certainly didn't like the idea of a government agency being able to go to this board and try to have me or somebody else declared to be a vexatious requester.
Oh, I would hate that for you, Laura. I would hate that. Vexatious? Oh, no. I know you better than that. But the question, how could this possibly be legal?
I don't think it really would be legal. I mean, there are all kinds of First Amendment problems and also equal protection problems, because if somebody were declared to be a vexatious requester, then the government could ignore requests from that person but fulfill the request from another person. And also the way it was worded, the way the draft legislation was worded, whether you're declared to be vexatious would depend on the content of your requests and the content of your communications with government employees. And that kind of content-based regulation does seem to be on its face a First Amendment violation. And that's what the letter from the Iowa Freedom of Information Council was arguing.
All right. 1 minute left. 1 minute. The Iowa Public Utilities Board wants to finish the Summit Carbon Capture Pipeline hearing this month. Summit has run into trouble in both North and South Dakota. Regulators there have denied their permit request. Summit appears to be right now in a mess. Where do they go from here?
I don't know. I mean, and I don't know why the Iowa Utilities Board is so eager to finish this hearing early. There were some hearings, there were some days where they weren't even able to use up all their time last week because Summit's witnesses weren't ready. The attorneys for the landowners, certainly, they want this to continue. They feel that they still have a lot of evidence that they want to air and testimony that they want to air. And so I'm not really sure what is the goal. I mean, a lot of people wanted the Iowa Utilities Board to delay these hearings to begin with because North Dakota had denied Summit Summit's permit application. And then since the hearings began, South Dakota has denied Summit's permit application. So I'm not sure where this is going. I mean, that my impression when I talk to people who are following these hearings very closely is that this pipeline is not going to get built if they can't get approval in North and South Dakota. But it still certainly looks like the Iowa Utilities Board is more favorably inclined towards Summit than the regulators in those other states.
Very quickly, what are you looking for this week?
Oh, I'm going to be interested, of course, in what Donald Trump says in the swing through Eastern Iowa.
All right, Laura, it has been a pleasure. We should tell you folks out there. Should we tell them where you've been doing this broadcast?
Yes. Yes, I'm in Okoboji. I'm at the Okoboji Writers Retreat, the third annual Okoboji Writers Retreat, which
is a great event. In a car doing this from a hotspot. There I see you, Laura. Have a great evening, okay?
You too, Dennis.
We're out of time for this edition of Capital Week. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura Vexatious Bellin and I, Dennis Hart, will be back here in the same time slot next week. And as usual, we're going to talk about everything interesting or important or entertaining that takes place in Iowa politics. Between now and then, wherever you can join us, whenever, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and very happy week.